ओम शांति। दिस मॉर्निंग आवर सब्जेक्ट इज द ग्रेटनेस ऑफ द पावर ऑफ ट्रूथ एंड देर आर क्वाइट इंटरेस्टिंग वर्ड्स इन दैट ग्रेटनेस पावर एंड ट्रूथ। ईच ऑफ दोज इज अ होल सब्जेक्ट। Truth is a very subtle thing. So I want to look at it today in terms of comparison, contrasts, and resonances, and this kind of thing. The song that we just heard in Hindi spoke about Baba's Sacche Bacche, the true children of Baba. And as you know from the Murlis, there are two kinds of children, the real children and the stepchildren, Sotele and Matele. And if you have the word Satcha, then by contrast there is the opposite implied, the untrue, the false, the fake, the make-believe. So when we're talking about soul consciousness and body consciousness, which is also a very important contrast, we say that soul consciousness is true consciousness, and that body consciousness is false consciousness, and we also call it false ego. So then the opposite of truth becomes something to do with ego issues. And as you know, out of all of the five vices, the ego is most difficult to discern within one's own self. It has the nature of hiding itself. I think that we have a tendency, we can say perhaps, the more we are in body consciousness, the more easy it is to see somebody else's false ego or ego problem. And we then react to it. So there is something about the falsehood, or the nature of falsehood, or the opposite of truth, which has a nature of escalating. Because the false sees the false, reacts to it, and then it's an escalating reaction. And Baba has given us homework to do. We have two more days to hand in our homework, as you know, or 3 days. And part of the homework was to become free from good and bad, or things which are right and wrong. So normally when we think of something being true, we're looking at one end of a spectrum with false at the other end of the spectrum. But then Baba, who is himself the truth, has told us, stay away from that spectrum. Because when we're putting ourselves in the spectrum of true and false, we're also looking at another part of the homework which Baba had given us, and that is the homework of the three me's, you know. Teen me, Hindi me is I, but of course me is me in English. I don't know about the other languages. But the three me, or the three consciousness of I, one is I am everything, that's one end of the spectrum of body consciousness. And then the other one is I am nothing, which is the other end. And we kind of oscillate between these two sort of superiority and inferiority complexes, neither of which are valid in terms of greatness or truth, and they're also not powerful. And the third me, or the third I, he spoke about is I am the soul. And so that is true, I am a soul. It is not true that I am everything, it is not true that I am nothing, but it is true that I am the soul. And I think as all of us are focused very much on being soul consciousness, we want to be authentic, we want to be genuine, we want to be true to the self, as in to thine own self be true. And one thing I found with truth is as soon as it's been uttered, whatever that particular truth happens to be, it's uttered, it's written down, it's cast in stone, it's not truth anymore. I don't know if you've experienced that, but there is a moment of truth when the truth is truth, and when that moment is gone, that truth becomes history. And it can be written down, and that we say so-and-so is true, or the truth, like God is here, the truth. But it's the moment of us experiencing that he has come that's true, and then when we say to somebody, he has come, it's not true anymore, and that's why they don't accept it. Do you understand what I mean? There's a certain moment of truth which I think we want to try to hold on to or allow to resonate. Like there's some Tibetan bells David Bai has in the art department, you should go and see. He got them from Manali and they ring nicely, and the resonance of that ring lasts for maybe a couple or 3 minutes, which is about as long as the moment of truth maybe can last, you know? And then after we've completed that vibration of that truth, we may say to somebody, such and such a thing was the truth, but it's like a newspaper report of something that happened. It's not the same thing as the truth. And so when we say it is the truth, because it's a report of the truth, it's not actually the truth. It doesn't have the ring of truth. It doesn't have the power of truth. And so it goes in the category of the untruth or the non-truth. And then it becomes dogma, or it becomes something that you try to impose on somebody or convince somebody about, and it contains an element of violence. And in fact, even Baba had said one time, very interestingly, that if you tell the truth with anger, it's not the truth anymore. You remember that one? And so the truth is very like soap, as Simon says, Simon from London. The more you hold on to it, the more it slips out of your hands. So then we come again to our subject, the greatness of the power of truth. So we want to define a little bit more, what is that thing called truth? In the value education program that I work with, one of the elements of it is a dialogue. And it's not like two people talking to each other, but something much more subtle. And I remember that there was 8 of us who spent 7 days together. Anthony, Phillips, and Brian Bacon, Mark Foucard, Gianti Ben, myself, Anthony Strano, Mike George, who else? Who? Ken, Brother Ken. So the 8 of us sat in a 7 days bhati on the subject of the 7 days course, and each one of us took one of the subjects of the 7 days course, soul, supreme soul, ladder tree, etc. Mine was God. I can't remember the other ones. And we just spent the entire time in dialogue. And where we weren't sitting in, this was in Oxford, in the blue room downstairs for the full 7 days. And what we created, much to our amazement, and which sticks very strongly in my memory, was a single soul with 8 bodies. You know what I mean? That we were so in tune with each other that we became a kind of a truth. Of course, we enjoyed it for some time, and then the resonance of the bowl gradually faded, but it left a very powerful memory of what is possible when the different kinds of separators and misunderstandings, or being on a different wavelength or on a different planet or whatever that we all are, that constitute different degrees of falseness. You remember that thing, and it sticks in your heart. And you know that Daddy Jenki has been talking about the intellect as the heart, for you not to keep anything bad in it, but it sticks in your heart or your intellect of what's possible with truth. And in that process, we become completely exposed to each other. So it is a thing that causes one another to have to trust. And I think the question of being willing to trust, to be able to open oneself completely to another human being, to see whatever there is to see, is a form of truth right there. Because when you're with each other, and Brahmins and experienced ones at that, you can't pretend, you can't fake it. So you just move through whatever are the very delicate and disturbing moments of falsehood that come up to prevent this coming together of 8 souls to become for a moment one soul, where all the different people could feel each other completely and could have a thought, and all the others would have the same thought. We all had the thought that we should have pizza, and it came. That was a very mundane expression of it, but you know, it could operate on any level. And we felt that a very empowered. And sometimes I think when Baba tells us, you know, if everybody has the same thought at the same time, to that kind of extent that we 8 were able to build up, you can change the world in a second. Even if we have, say, a, what do you call it, critical number, maybe 1 million, or I don't know however many it is, maybe 900,000 BKs all having the same thought at the same time is the critical mass that makes the earth turn upside down, as Baba said this morning. And there's a flip, not just a physical upside down flip, or 22 and a half degrees to 0 degrees, or however you want to interpret this flip, but from body consciousness to soul consciousness, in such a way that there is no such thing as body consciousness anymore, is gone. We get moments of it. Maybe we meditate for a long time and we bring ourselves up, or maybe we get into the kind of intoxication that we see in Daddy Jenki very often. As soon as she starts talking about things to do with Baba, she moves into that dimension of truth that is the present moment, that is completely integrated, and that's intoxicating, that nasha. Sometimes called the Narayani Nasha, the intoxication of being Narayan, which means I know who I am at a very deep level. I know who I am, I know what I am true to myself. I am the golden aged soul, or you can say the Brahman who has become the angel, the deity, the soul, you know, and then you finish the drama and you start all over again, moving gradually away from truth towards the final end of the 84th birth, where total untruth and total truth meets, and in some kind of sizzling something, you flip from one extreme to the other extreme. So I think a lot of the process that we go through in the confluence age is trying to get the kind of current between the two poles of extreme Maya and extreme truth, and then to jump the gap. And that jumping is a kind of extraordinary moment of truth that we have to have several of in order to make a final jump from which we don't jump back. When Dadi Chandramani left the body and found herself in the subtle regions, she said, great, you know, finally I've been able to make it to the subtle regions, so now I can go back and tell everyone. And Baba said, you can't, it's one-way ticket. You're dead. Oh, am I? You know? A leap, you see, from one state to another state. Of course, I don't think it's only the physical death that involves that, but there's a lot of false ego death that takes place bit by bit along the journey of the Brahman process or the Brahman life. We speak about living the dying death, dying the living death, living the dying life, however we want to put it. But somehow being dead is being more alive than when you think you're alive, because our kind of sense of being alive is so full of falsehood. And this expression, fake it till you make it, we do a lot, don't we? We inculcate soul consciousness. Yeah, I'm meditating. And we try different ways. We see various people looking soul conscious, and then we put that on, like someone who adopts different airs. We copy. Baba says we have to copy Brahma Baba. And so we may try in many different ways to copy Brahma Baba. But I think the main way in which we have to copy Brahma Baba is in surrender. Dadi Jenki speaks about her relationship with Brahma Baba every time she is giving a class. And I think that for people who say, I have not met Brahma Baba because I am a sankalpa creation, yeah, a creation of thought, an avyakt creation. And we do meet Brahma Baba every time we meet Avyakt Bab Dada. We do meet Brahma Baba every time we hear a murli. And we meet Brahma Baba in all kinds of different ways, because this Madhuban is his creation. And the experience of the different Brahmins who knew him in physical form adds to our own subtle experience and our angelic experience of him that we experience in our mind through touchings, through him coming to us, and so on. So there are many, many access points where we are able to copy Brahma Baba. You have copying, you have emulating, and you have following. And we are called brahmacharis. Brahmachari is a word for celibacy. And brahmachari also means Brahma Acharya, Brahma the teacher. And there's also an aspect of Brahmachari, the follower of Brahma. And so following Brahma means purity. Purity is not something that you can discern very easily. Like, for example, I talk about these five elements of the soul. I hope you're keeping track of all my little threads that are going out there. The five elements of the soul: purity, peace, power, inner power, love, and bliss, not happiness. Purity, peace, love, power, and bliss. Now, you know what love feels like. You know what peace feels like. You know what power feels like. And if you're lucky, you know what bliss feels like. But what does purity feel like? Right? You don't know how to figure out how to get yourself to feel purity, I don't think. I mean, you could try it. But I think purity is a very intangible element of the soul. And so, by contrast, impurity is also intangible. And I think that purity is one of the things that's analogous to truth. So if we say the Narayani intoxication, that's also truth, that's also purity. I am true to myself, that's also a kind of purity, because when I'm not true to myself, that's impurity. You see. So I think the greatness of the power of truth goes parallel with the greatness of the power of purity. I think truth is very intangible, momentary, but you can feel it when it comes. And then purity, I think, even more intangible. In India, purity is usually defined, in my opinion, rather a gross way, as somebody who's a virgin, you know. But I find that we want to go a whole lot further than that, purity. Because if you take the biblical reference to purity, they say, I think something like, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. I think that's right, is it? You will know better than me. But there's something about purity in heart and being able to perceive Baba. Because Baba is very difficult to perceive. You notice how Dadi Janki often makes the distinction, which she did in her morning class in Pandabhavan today, between knowing something here and knowing something here. And then making the analogy of the heart and the intellect, as opposed to the brain and knowing it but not knowing it. You know it intellectually, but you don't have a clue what it is, because you are not able to experience the meaning of that expression. And so words, when you're in body consciousness, are experienced intellectually, lexicologically, you can say, according to the dictionary. And the English language, at least, is made by body conscious people. All right, even the pronoun he and she means it's a body conscious language. And because the soul is neither a he body or a she body. So either of them are irrelevant. And we're not exactly an it either. So there is no pronoun for us who need them. And it's difficult to invent a new one, because it becomes a BK jargon. You see, and as soon as you have a BK jargon, it's got a lot of quality of falsehood about it, because you have the in crowd and the out crowd who don't know what you're talking about. This sort of exclusionary nature of technical language is again a form of arrogance, which again is falsehood, comes from false pride. I know, you don't. Excuse me, you are a third-class human. And we have this aspiration, you know, I have to be one of the eight. Okay, no, I don't think so. Okay, 108. So many people's email is so-and-so 108 at yahoo.com or something. This sort of superstitious hope that somehow we can invoke it, or your password, or your number on your suitcase lock. You see, it's very easy to get into a BK suitcase. Because we have certain kind of numerology that we use, which we think is secret, but it's not, you know. It's obvious. So, you know, we say, okay, we're Brahmins, you know, we're BK, and we develop a kind of soul consciousness that's very body conscious, you know. And then we experience at certain anguished moments that I don't know what this is, or what I'm doing, or what I did, but I have to redo it because it's not real. Is it? Do you feel that? And I think that the Brahman life is like that. You get a kind of sense of truth, and you go along that until it becomes so false that you can't hold it anymore. And you reach a dead end where you have to re-find and re-ring your Tibetan bell and get to the next level. So when I was talking about the little group of eight in Oxford, the effectiveness of our dialogue still remains in our conversations 15, 20 years later. And so I use this in the value education groups, and it's very powerful, so that whatever topic we happen to take up in the dialogue groups, we work with it for quite a long time, usually about 4 hours, and it's like churning the subject according to certain dialogue rules, until you get a kind of a butter that comes out and rings, and everybody recognizes, somebody says it, whatever it happens to be, and you feel it, and everything stops while it resonates, and you kind of take it in. And that's your moment of truth, where you realize something. And we have this expression, Mahasthaki Shakti, the Hindi one, the power to feel, which means feel the truth, or feel the rightness of something, or even the wrongness of something. Because how do we change? Is it not possible to change until we get a very intense experience that what I thought was real isn't, and you drop it. And from that moment on, you're a different person because your standards have changed. Things from your category of it's okay disappear from that category to the it's not okay category. And you have moved. Have you experienced this? And then you have to rethink the whole thing, and all of a sudden the Murali is some other thing. You see? Because change has taken place. Little notches of change take place, and they also correspond with a destruction of some element of our ego. And you know the expression ego death. And I find that one of the important attributes of Dadi Janki is that her conquest of her own ego has enabled her to exude a vibration which has the power to kill our ego. Have you experienced that? And of course, unless you are a willing sacrificial lamb, it will hurt. And even if you are a willing sacrificial lamb, it will hurt. But the thing is to be able to allow that destruction of that attribute of the ego to be done, that spiritual operation to be done, for us to be denuded of a layer of falsehood. And then we can move forward. And there's an interesting analogy that I think helps, and that's the analogy of the lobster. I don't know if you're aware about it, but a lobster starts off, you know how a lobster looks, right? And it starts off quite little. And of course, a lobster is a soft, fleshy thing that lives inside an exoskeleton. And so you grow from the inside and your skeleton gets too tight after a while. So, because it doesn't grow. So 8 times the lobster has to shed its exoskeleton. And in the meantime, it's just a spineless, highly vulnerable creature until it grows a new one the next size up. And that takes 8 times. And I find it quite a relevant analogy that as we move forward in our quest to become true to our own selves, we experience our personal growth to a point where it does not fit in our little compartmentalized sense of self, which we call our soul conscious self, which is just slightly less body conscious than our body conscious self, but it's not all the way as far as soul conscious, I think. So we have to burst out of these different constraints every so often, which is a very trying process. And sometimes we call this as Maya. And we sometimes think that when we are experiencing this uncomfortable state of not liking our soul conscious state anymore because we found it's actually very body conscious and we didn't understand anything and we have to kind of start again. We are actually moving forward and we never really go all the way back to our untruth and our grossness, but it feels like we went further back than we ever were in the first place. Do you experience this? And so we have to have faith that the process is like this. Oddly enough, nobody tells us, because this is, after all, easy ride yoga, and you just sail through, you know, on a perfectly mirror level of calm river to cross from one side to the other. But anyway, it's actually not like that. There's all kinds of problems. Your boat starts trying to sink, and various storms happen, and all sorts of things happen, which are very confusing. So I think it's quite good to know that when everything looks like completely unrecognizable and you can't understand anything at all, it's perfectly okay. You know, you just keep going. And it's just a bit patch of fog or so, yeah? And you just move through and you come into, after the confusing period, you come into greater clarity, greater light. And then you say, yeah, yeah, this is true, you know. And you, still you go. And even that isn't it. And you go again, that isn't it, you know. And all the while, we are supposed to maintain certain norms, certain principles, which are very, very necessary in this process. And these are commitments. This again is part of our homework, which I think also Daddy Jenki has been referring to. And then it's also part of the following Brahma Baba. We may not have a waste thought. You see, of course we have a million waste thoughts. But anyway, we may not have a waste thought. So the most important thing is to get to a point where you stop allowing the waste thought to sort of resonate and start living in your heart. Because what happens, you remember the spectrum of right and wrong. And a waste thought is, this is good and that is bad. This is a waste thought. Because we get impressed by what's good, we like that, we go for that, and we don't like what's bad. We have to try and get rid of it, stop it, make everybody else agree that it's bad and that this thing is good. This is all actually comes in the category of intellectual arrogance. And it puts us into that flip-flop of I am everything and I am nothing. Because when I say this is good, it's I am everything. I am the one who figured out that this is good. Baba said it doesn't take rocket science to figure out this is right and this is wrong. Why are you people sort of caught up in that and think you're so great for being able to discern right from wrong? Because it's just too obvious. So then he says, no, go beyond that. Because being able to discern that and thinking that that's the end of the story is a lot of self-deception. Because gyan, or you can say truth, is that it actually doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong, or good or bad, or people are competent or are incompetent, or any of that, you see. What matters is, did I think about it or not? Because, as Dadi was mentioning, when she was meeting with the Madhuban Nivasis a couple of days ago, she said that Baba, Shri Baba, in the path of bhakti is described as asochta, abhokta, akarta, which means the unthinking one, the one to whom nothing ever happens, and the one who doesn't do anything. And so, to follow Baba, we have to become that. You know how many times Daddy says, don't think. And in fact, today she asked everybody to make a commitment that by the 31st of October we will have lost the habit of thinking. So I used to say, I'm not going to give up thinking, that is my whole existence. I think, therefore I am, or I am, therefore I think, you know. But no, she says, don't think. So, if we don't think, then it means that we have to dispossess ourselves of our mind. And even again, part of the homework that Baba had given us is, you do not have a mind, therefore you do not have any right to have any waste thoughts, let alone bad thoughts. So waste and bad are anyway untrue. Untrue in the sense of they're not genuine, they're not valuable, they're not real in the sense of they don't have the power of truth, which is the power to persist, therefore don't have them. Because they're pollutants. Whether it's correct or not that somebody did that or said that or whatever is neither here nor there. Holding the thought is to pollute the conscience and prevent it from functioning. And then our power, we don't have power of discernment, power of accommodation, power of tolerance, power of discrimination and good judgment. So if we don't think, then that I am nothing and I am everything is taken care of in that process of don't think. So if you don't think, then you just have to become a mirror and reflect Baba. I think one of the things mirrors are good for is if you want to attract attention and you're sort of lost in the ocean, you have a mirror, you just try to catch the sun in the mirror so that your mirror lights up very bright, yes? So I think that when the mind becomes completely still and you have given up saying this is my thought, or this is my opinion, or this is my mind. And just try to reflect the light. That will be causing a lot of attraction. You will draw attention to the spiritual by doing that. Because every time we have a waste thought, or we have a negative thought, even if it's true, and even if it's right, you know, it creates a wrong vibration. It doesn't reflect the light of truth. It reflects falsehood of intellectual arrogance. And so it doesn't attract. It's like it doesn't reflect anything visible. It reflects darkness. It just becomes like a black hole. And so once you see that, you don't bother with it, because there is a gut feeling that this thing has no meaning. So then you've moved a little bit. A little bit of ego is gone. And you really don't care whether you're important or unimportant, right or wrong, or somebody else is right or wrong. It didn't make any difference to anything. And then you bring in the knowledge of drama, which Daddy Jenki has also been talking about in these last few days. It is fixed. And even there have been discussions among a few of us. You cannot actually have a thought, isn't it? Very good. So if you don't think, you just resonate that with that light. You try to remember Baba. That is, you want to be in tune with Baba. If you want to tune a guitar, you know when it's in tune, right? Or any other instrument, there's a thing that says you're tuned. In the same way, yoga, there's a thing that says you're tuned, and which makes it possible for you to view all of these things completely dispassionately. And know that this is just wallpaper. At the level of thoughts, words, feelings, innuendos, what you don't know, what you're trying to know, any of those things. And your conscience starts to be able to function. And it says, you know, wondering what somebody's talking about to somebody else is false, is bad. Yeah? Wondering what somebody thinks of you is in the same category. Wondering why somebody is getting something. You know, because all of this raises the vibration of falsehood and takes us away from the truth of what it is to be, to exist. And then, of course, you can't just be a mirror that reflects Baba. Nobody can see Baba except us. And it says, you know, blessed are the pure in heart because they can see God. So we can only really see Baba when we have denuded ourselves of all of these shells and masks and so on, to be able to be without a thought, where in that case the mind is no longer creating things that come from just the self, that is to say, that arise from the sanskaras. Because where do thoughts come from? Sanskaras. Then Baba had said, part of our homework, you do not have the right to have any sanskaras. Ooh. Because what is a soul? Four things. Well, what does a soul have? A mind, intellect, good sanskaras, bad sanskaras. Four things. When he says, change your sanskaras, some people take a cosmic knife to themselves and try and cut out the bad sanskaras and throw them away in some mystic waste paper basket, which doesn't exist. The soul cannot be bifurcated, can it? That means to say you are stuck with your bad sanskaras as well as with your good ones. And so I think the trick is to be completely neutral towards either of them, in which case it becomes possible to donate them. Because Baba has said we have to denude ourselves of our mind, our intellect, and our sanskaras, good or bad sanskaras. Which means basically that I can't think, I can't do anything, akarta, asochta, and then obviously abhokta, nothing is going to happen to me since I'm not thinking anything or doing anything. Then I can become real, in the sense of still. There's a bit of Hindu philosophy which comes in here quite nicely, and that is the description or definition of what is real or true is that which cannot change. So we know that the only thing that can't change is God, who is called immutable in English. And in Hindi, there isn't much attention on that unchanging aspect of God. But in Christianity, there is this word immutable that goes with immortal. Huh? We have immortal and immutable. And we are mortal, we are immortal souls, but mutable. And so we have the illusion of mortality. And what is an ordinary mortal? It's a soul conscious, it's a body conscious soul. And so to follow Brahma Baba in surrendering means surrendering the mind, the intellect, and the sanskaras. And so then what we have left is the soul. And then the question is, well, if I'm not mind, intellect, and sanskaras, then what am I? And so again, we come back to the original question, two questions, who am I and what am I? And then we go deeper into it. What am I? Dot. Okay, not a light bulb, you know, small one, but a thing that cannot be represented, because geometrically a dot has no, you know, thickness, width or depth or anything. So I am, but I'm nothing, but I am. So I'm not nothing, I'm not everything or anything, but I am. The three me's, just I am the soul. I've donated my mind, I've donated my sanskaras, I've donated my intellect, and the last part of the Gita, nashto moha smriti labdha, I have destroyed all of my attachments and I have understood who I am and what I am. In other words, you become still. So truth, or the greatness of the power of truth, is to be able to be so detached from the self that you just become a still point and just mirror, reflect Baba and become for a moment just like him. I think this is what Brahma Baba has done. You see. We worry about status in the confluence age. And there is a very severe illness that's going around in the Iron Age called status anxiety. And it does penetrate the confluence age too. And it's represented by the phrase, I can't, I have to, I don't have time, what are you talking about, don't you understand, these kinds of things. We are very afraid to let go. And so we cling to different positions and titles and all of this business. And then we find that we don't have enough energy or time to meditate. Do you experience this? These are look at work and a family and I can't meditate, no way. You see, so that means that we got pulled into all that. It's just a few moments, traffic control. Om Shanti. And I like to look at this word power as a magnet. The greatness of the power of truth as a magnet to pull us from one dimension of reality through the eye of a needle to another dimension. Because when we're in body consciousness or false consciousness, we are basically in one world, which is the material world. And we are in materialistic consciousness, which is called Jyoti Maya, Jyoti Kaya, Juta Subsansar. You learn some Hindi along the way. Maya is false, the body is false, the whole world is false. This is a saying, well-known saying, that occasionally comes in the Murli. And it refers to the fact that when we're in body consciousness, we can roam around only in one world. Whereas in soul consciousness, we need to be able to roam around in three worlds. And we have to become lords of the three worlds, where we are equally at home and comfortable in the material world, the subtle world, and the incorporeal world. Now, we know that the subtle world is like a dream, or a shadow, or a 3D, what do you call the thing, hologram type thing. In other words, we say, oh, it's not real. Now, if you're there, and you look back at this with its grossness, it is gross, but it's not real any more than the subtlety of a hologram is real when you're looking at it from that perspective. And then you go to the soul world where is, you know, there's no thinking going on. There's no activity going on, and there's no consequences of any action. This is the state in which Shri Baba dwells, akarta, asochta, abhokta. Not thinking, not doing, and not getting any result of anything. So absolutely nothing is going on, no time, no space, just silence, stillness, the dot, being a dot. And from there, all of this is called the drama, which is also called the dot. And the subtle regions from that place is a more like a kind of graphic design software where you can make anything that can be thought of, whether it's realizable or not, doesn't have anything to do with anything. And there's a little website called When Graphic Artists Get Bored, and you can see what's possible in the graphic design department. But you see, that place of being, not doing anything, not thinking anything, and not having anything happening to you is really the stage of Bapsaman. So we need to develop a relationship with the activities that are going on in this material world that is completely detached and dispassionate, but absolutely loving. And it is in this state that Brahma Baba transited into the subtle regions without anything being there to pull him back into the material world. And this is why Daddy Jenki the other day was saying that as far as she can tell, he's the only one who's actually been able to become karmatit, and so he can stay in the subtle regions. You know, and Baba in the Bhog message today was saying the same for Daddy Prakashmani, that she's enjoying herself in the subtle regions. I see, because her body is not allowing her to do very much down here. And so it becomes a way that the magnetic force of the truth of our original state can be fully operational, because the body is left behind. And it's only because of having a body that we are stuck in this dimension where we think everything is real and important and good and bad and all that. And as long as our mind and intellect is caught up in this, and it can't become still enough to say that it doesn't make any difference to anything, whether it's here or not here or good or bad or any of it, because it's all fixed. then you go again to the question, who am I, what am I? You know, I'm a lord of the three worlds. And the greatness of the power of truth is that it allows me to be silent enough, still enough, dispassionate enough, not worrying at all about any of the things we get fully worried about, to go through the eye of the needle and into the world of Jivan Mukti. Mukti, but Jivan. You're free. You're still able to come into this body, but none of it matters. That means it's very flexible, very free. And then Baba says, okay, having freed yourself up, now accumulate power. Is not possible to accumulate power really in a good way until we are free from the things that create the leakages. And any, you can say, focus of attention on anything material because we say it's important or it's real or it's good or it's bad, pulls away my spiritual energy or drains the yoga power out. And then we remain always at square one kind of thing. And the truth remains a nice idea. We can't experience its greatness, we can't experience its power. Daddy Jenki said this morning, Satchitobito Nach, which is a Sindhi proverb. Not very many people know the story of who is true is dancing. So I'll just tell you the story quickly. And the story is there was a businessman and he wanted a trusted secretary because he had to make sure that somebody can, you know, run his work for him, fully trusted. And so he called some people for interview and he tested them that they had to go through a dark tunnel. And in the dark tunnel there were diamonds and so they were free to pick them up and put them in their pockets and then they came out of the tunnel. And then at the end of the tunnel he says, okay now, dance. So whoever had diamonds in their pockets couldn't because they'd come out, right? And who was honest could dance because they didn't pick up the diamonds. And so he selected that one. So that's the origin of that story, little Cindy story. And that means that we are liable to corruption. We are susceptible to corruption because nobody's looking. The most corrupt thing, Baba says, is to break your celibacy because everything's done in the dark, nobody's looking. And so it's very corrupt and you go totally against yourself by getting fully involved in the warm mud that the human body is. After all, 60%, 70% water, some of earth and some fire, warm mud. And so the total loss of connectedness with the self, that is also called corruption. So our attraction to the human body, the flesh, all this is called corruption. And then being willing to accept money in exchange for doing something that you know is immoral is also called corruption. That means to say corrupt is to knowingly go against the dictates of your conscience. That means it's called impurity. Following the dictates of your conscience will take you to purity. When you go against the dictates of your conscience, you go into impurity. Your conscience is corrupt. That is to say it is dysfunctional. And so you understand things only from the point of intellect. Where you can justify anything and figure it into whatever way you want it to be to make yourself look good or feel good. So all of this is called corruption. And if we make ourselves truth-based, The power and attraction of the truth, the gyan, is the truth. I am a soul, mind, intellect, good sanskaras, bad sanskaras, give up all of them. I am a soul, I belong to Baba, and I'm going to the soul world and then to the golden age. And the attraction of that truth is counteracted by the attraction of matter or the corruption. You see, and we are so unwilling to let go of our support system, which is corruption. And corruption begets corruption. Very difficult to get out of it. And when you get out of it, you have to expose the corrupt nature of yourself. And that doesn't feel good because the ego hates it. But it's a very good way for the ego to die, to allow this exposure to happen. If we don't want to do that, then instead of the power, the greatness of the power of truth, we can't go through the eye of the needle, we end up just corrupt. So that is one kind of destination, corrupt. And the other kind of destination is you see what's true, but you can't do it, but you can feel it. And so you kind of stretch yourself and your mind breaks, and that's called madness, you know. So that's another option. And then the third option, which I think is very nice, but it doesn't sound very good, which is really the crucifixion. Because you, to get through the eye of the needle, to go to the other side, to actually allow the greatness of the power of truth to pull you through that tiny little space, you have to allow anything and everything that comes in the drama to destroy anything about you that's false. And it comes in the form of character assassination, rejection, false accusation, every kind of possible thing, along with illnesses and failure and so on and so forth, you know. So you get good and crucified. But you become a dot and you can go through that little hole to the other side and become a master of the three worlds. And you are a free being, a light hand, a right hand, a jivan mukta soul, a person who is not trying to protect any of their masks because they threw them all off. And you became so denuded that you say, yes, not my mind, not my sanskaras, not my intellect. And there's just I, the soul, and Baba, and you have left all the supports. You don't hold on to any anchors. Your anchors are lifted up from the shore. You go through that little eye of the needle, and you have passed the exam. Because it doesn't make any difference to you whether you're dead or alive. What difference does it make? Because you're anyway a soul. And whether you're in, you know, you do not think this is my body. It's more like this is a body. And you do, yeah, because you do. But it doesn't matter. And therefore, you're not fear-based. Oh, and most people are fear-based, I see. Because afraid of how they look, afraid of losing face, afraid of who knows what, you know. Especially afraid of pain and death and supports. You know, Dadi has been also talking about you need your supports. You see. But to be free, you have to be adult, which means no mother and father, no sisters and brothers, no position, no nothing. Denuded. And you're a free bird. And just as Dadi was saying this morning, why do we offer bhog? It's not bhakti, it's gyan. Why? Because he is the one who's sustaining us. So you become so free and so powerful, you know, because you have to find your power as you lose the make-believe power, the security, the insecurity, right? Because when you're insecure, you have to have lots of money, and you have to have lots of this, and lots of that, and lots of the other, so that you can prove that you're powerful, but all you end up proving is that you're not powerful. You're weak. But when you denude yourself of everything, and you just simply understand, I am an actor, here's the role, the circumstance will dictate the role, could be anything, doesn't really matter. You're an actor, you get paid to do that particular part, whether it's a villain or a servant or a postman or a washerwoman or a king or an... It doesn't make any difference. So we have to discern, okay, this is the day, you get a direction, this is what you have to do, you do it, you know, and there's either an obstacle or not, it either works out or it doesn't work out, but it doesn't make any difference, I see. Because you don't identify with that. You just simply work at being the mirror, very still, reflect the light of Baba through any circumstance. Doesn't really matter what it is. And so following Baba, being the one in consciousness of Sheep Baba while peeling potatoes, while sitting in tapasya, while walking with the children, while taking a bath, whatever it happens to be, the attention on, I am reflecting the Supreme Being. So he became the full moon, because you know the full moon is the memorial of Brahma Baba. I see, the reflection of the sun. So the Shiva Baba, the sun of knowledge, Brahma Baba, the moon of knowledge, and we are stars, that means little mirrors, who are reflecting the sun. In that sense of little bright lights. And then this is to find your truth and find your power. Once you've found your power, there's a very nice experience which I like very much. Nobody can kill you because anyway you're immortal, so it doesn't matter whether you're dead or alive. So that's it. And nobody can corrupt you because your conscience is functional and you don't really care whether you win or lose or any of that stuff. So you're incorruptible. And nobody can break your spirit, which is what is being done to you on a constant basis. Try and break your spirit, kill you in every possible way, so that you rise up from that fear base into value base or truth base. Then I, the soul, am just truth, satyam, shivam, sundaram. This is what is said for God. He's the truth, he's beautiful, he's Shiva, the dot. So we also experience, as we come into that, everything is beautiful. So Daddy was saying this morning, she was liking this song, who has come and taught me how to smile, and made me his own and taught me how to smile, you see. So deep, simple, but so deep. You go to that point where you find your power, you find your truth, you find your freedom, and then nothing matters. You have passed. And so I think as a karma teet must be something like that. So, Om Shanti.